evaluating and developing a girls' ministry. What I want to do in our time together this morning is to stimulate our thinking regarding looking at the big picture of the girls' ministry rather than getting bogged down in individual lives. So we're going to be looking at just what's involved in the overall evaluation of an area or a campus, wherever you happen to be, and then how we can develop that area or campus or wherever. And what I'm going to do is to start off by just sharing a few principles with you under three headings. And these are going to be evaluation, recruiting, and developing. And these are just ones that I'm aware of, and I realize that you are probably aware of many more. So when I've got through my list, I'll just open it up and you can all add to it. But this way we'll save time. And then I'm going to give you some situations, some case histories of situations which you can evaluate and develop together. And then we'll share those and discuss them. Okay? So first of all, let's have some thoughts on evaluation. And my first point is that evaluation is discerning the worth of something. And in order to discern the worth of something, we have to discern it in the light of our objective. So the first main point under this subject of evaluation is that it has to be done in the light of our objective. And I apologize for this writing up here, but I just wanted you to have the objective or the objectives of the Navigator Girls work up in front of you. Let me read it out because my writing is atrocious. Firstly, to raise up women who fit the Navigator disciple and disciple maker profiles. Secondly, to help women find their most effective place in the body of Christ. And this is done firstly by assisting them in discovering and developing their God-given gifts. Secondly, by encouraging them to acquire a vocational skill. Thirdly, by imparting the heart, vision, and know-how of disciple-making in the context of any role in which they are called to serve. And then lastly, to supply the projected needs of the navigators for women laborers, i.e. girls workers, wives, office staff, and girls in homes. So this is the background against which we will be evaluating any type of girls' ministry. And we need to know that in order to know, well, you know, what do we evaluate? How do we evaluate? What questions do we ask ourselves when we're going about finding the worth of a situation? So I just jotted down three main questions that I ask myself. Firstly, how can we win the lost and build up the saved? Because that's really what it's all about, especially thinking in terms of the total objective of making disciples. How can we win the lost and build up the saved? Second question, how can we meet the needs of the individuals within the ministry? And again, this is what it's all about, because although we have to look at the whole picture is made up of individuals. But when I say this, how can we meet the needs of individuals, I don't mean by this what are their strengths and weaknesses, or, you know, what are their particular areas of need. I mean more, what level of maturity are the girls at? Are they disciples? Are they converts? Are they in need of building, character building? Are they in need of an apartment situation? Are they ready to lead a team? Those kind of needs, more the level of maturity. And then the third question, how can we serve and relate to the men's ministry in the area? Secondly, let's look at some tools for evaluating. Those are some questions to ask yourself when evaluating. Now let's look at some tools. And the first one I put down is prayer. Just pray for God's eyes to look at the situation. Secondly, objectives are a tool. These ones we've looked at this morning. And the objectives for the area ministry, you know, because as girls we're just a part of the overall objectives, so the objectives that the men have for the ministry will be a tool which we can use in evaluating. Then the third one is a list of resources and opportunities. And by that I mean that we just take one sheet of paper and on the right-hand side we can list our opportunities. In other words, if you're in an area, you might have three campuses in that area and maybe one big dorm where working girls live. Well, all those, that sounds a pretty big area to me, but you know, all those would be opportunities where you could minister. And then on the other side of the sheet of paper, you would write down resources. And under the resources, this would be mainly personnel. You might have one team leader, one convert. And then you would be able to see that, okay, you couldn't go into three campuses because you only had one team leader. So you need to list all your resources, all your opportunities, and then match them. So that's another tool that you can use. We can go into that a little bit more. Then the next tool is the profile of a navigator disciple and a disciple maker. And are you all familiar with the profiles? Guess you are. That is a very helpful tool. And then the last one is statistics. And I don't know how many of you have to turn in the numbers of converts and new disciples and disciple makers and all the rest of it. And I don't know how many of you think, as I often do, you know, this is a waste of time. Because I don't really know what I'm doing when I do that. You know, I just feel that I'm praying and guessing. It probably shows my lack of skill, but I really feel that sometimes. And yet, it really does help me. The more I do it, and the more the Lord helps me to do it more accurately, the more I can see the needs in the area. You know, for instance, if I have no converts, that tells me I need to work on evangelism. And if I have about 20 navigator disciples and two disciple makers, then the obvious need of the area for the next year is to make disciple makers out of those disciples. So properly used, those statistics can be a real tool in evaluating your situation. And then just one more. I said that was the last, but it wasn't. The last tool is the objective viewpoint of your area rep or your regional director. But that is very valuable, just to get the men's viewpoint, because they see the big picture much better than we do. We get bogged down in the details and we get bogged down in the personalities involved and the girls that, you know, we're close to and all the rest. But they really see things objectively. And it's good to use that. Okay, so basically that's all I'm going to say right now about evaluation, except to say that there are hazards, and one is getting too detailed too soon. Now, in other words, do I think that this particular girl who's been around for 3 years should stay around? You know, this is not necessarily the time to go into individual cases. This is the time to look at the whole picture. Okay, some principles of recruiting. And I've split this into two. I've called the first one recruiting into the group, and the second one recruiting out of the group. And by that I mean, firstly, initial recruiting. You know, when you go into an area and you've got maybe two or three girls and you need to recruit some more, or maybe you have got more, but they're not really banded together. Maybe you've got about 12 or 15 girls, but they're just kind of all individuals and you need to form a band. And then the second division is recruiting from that group to yourself or to your team leaders for deeper involvement. So those are my two sections. So firstly, recruiting to the group. And my first point there is to draw near and go with them. And that obviously comes from Scripture. And that's the verse in Luke 24 and verse 15, where we read about Jesus being on the road to Emmaus. And you remember, he meets the men there and he draws near and he goes with them. And he gets to know them and walks the road of their life with them. And I feel this is one of the key things in recruiting, that we get to know people in the context of their lives. We get alongside of them where they are. We get to know them. We do the things that they enjoy doing. You know, whether it's playing tennis, or whether it's going to a concert, or going to church, or whatever it is that they enjoy doing, then let's do it with them. Let's be a friend to them. Learn to understand them. In other words, this is the time for us to get alongside of them, meet their needs, not for us to go in and say, okay, now I'm going to do this, you know, you jump on the bandwagon with me. We need to draw near and go with them first. The second point is that we need to serve them. And you remember from Mark 10:45 that Jesus came not to be served, but to serve. And there's a verse in 1 Kings chapter 12 and verse 7. King Rehoboam is taking counsel with the old men who'd been around for a long time. And their counsel to him regarding his relationship with the people is, if you will be a servant to this people today and serve them and speak good words to them when you answer them, then they will be your servants forever. That's 1 Kings 12 and verse 7. So let's think of ways in which we can serve people. Let's go as a servant and not as a leader. You know, and this is hard because when you go into an area, you know, people look upon you as the leader. And especially if they've heard that you're coming and, you know, the men in the area have really plugged this fact that they're at last going to get this girl's work that they've been waiting for. You know, you go there and everybody just looks to you and kind of makes you the leader. But let's remember that we're servants and that we need to live out that role of being a servant as opposed to being a leader. If you can, I mean, the servant is the leader, but, you know, I'm just talking in our understanding of it. How can we serve? Well, we can serve in practical ways. You know, we can do things for people. We can help people find jobs. We can help them with their sewing. We can help them with their cooking. We have endless opportunities, really, to serve people. And then, of course, we can meet their needs on a spiritual basis. And I think, well, there's nothing that recruits people like meeting their needs, is there? I know that I wouldn't be around today if somebody had not met my needs. And I would never have had a vision for making disciples just through hearing people preach about it. I think Scotty mentioned this last night, didn't he? That the thing that motivates us is the fact that God has changed and is changing our lives. And as girls see that God will meet their needs through us, that will motivate them to want that same type of ministry. So this is the place to start. And to meet the needs that they want met, not the ones that we see, not at this stage. Firstly, we meet the needs that they are aware of and that they really want help in. And then if they see that God will help them in those areas, then they'll be more open to having the needs that they don't want met, met. And lastly, under this heading of serving, let them serve you as well and contribute to your life so that it's a mutual thing. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you ways in which you can do that. So draw near and go with them, serve them, and pray. John 17:9 demonstrates how Christ viewed his men. He said that these were men whom God had given him. And this is how we recruit people. God gives them to us. And again in Matthew 9:37-38, where we have Jesus looking out over the multitudes, he had compassion on them. And he saw that the harvest was plentiful, but the laborers were few. So what did he do? He prayed, and he told the disciples to pray. And we need to pray for the right kind of girls too. In 1 Samuel 16, verses 6 to 13, we have the story of Samuel going out to anoint the king. And you remember he looked at each one of David's brothers, and each one he came across, he thought, this has got to be the one. And God said, no, you're looking on the outward appearance, but I'm looking on the heart. And so we are not capable of recruiting the right kind of people, you know, even if we knew really what the right kind of people were. Because God only knows who needs to be recruited to our ministries. You know, and we're wasting our time if we go out with a specific end product in view and look for somebody to fit that. You know, I think you know that. But I just feel strongly that we need to pray for girls after God's own heart. And we don't see that when we first meet people. Okay, then recruiting from the group. And as I say, this is recruiting people from a bunch of people into a closer-in situation. And one caution here is that those of us who are here would probably be the ones who would do this type of recruiting. You know, the younger girls around the ministry would not even be aware of this, probably. But those of us who are here would probably be the ones to be recruiting girls to spend more time with, girls to develop, girls to have on a team, girls to do this and girls to do that. Firstly, recruit them to your life and not your ministry. I think we see this clearly demonstrated in Jesus' life. In Mark 3:14, it says that he appointed the 12 to be with him. In other words, to be a part of his life. He didn't ask them to be his team and to win the world with him, not at this point. He asked them to be with him, or he chose them to be with him. And another thing that I see about Jesus' life that is that he never offered them a position or a job, but he offered them reality in their walk with God. And what I mean by that is that it's easy to give a girl the impression that we are selecting her to be a future girls worker. And we do not select girls to be girls workers. God does. And I noticed in Jesus' life, you know, when James and John were vying for those positions at Jesus' right hand and his left, he said, "That's not mine to give you. That's given by God, by my Father who is in heaven." And I think it's important that we remember this, that we don't build up girls' expectations and hopes that this is what God has for them before he has made it clear. Now, he will make it clear, but he'll make it clear to them and to us both. So having said that, we'll start on the main points. Firstly, that we select those who have already been around for some time. Those who have already been with you in the ministry, those who know you, who know your style of ministry, who know how you tick. Those whose hearts you have. And again, we see how Jesus did that. He let the men get to know him first before he invited them to be in a closer relationship with him. And then secondly, let them select themselves. And the story that comes to my mind when I think about this is one that I read, I think it was in Born to Reproduce, but it was how Dawson Trotman in the early days had a group of men around, and he used to meet with them in Bible study, and then he hired the standards of the Bible study, and then he put the times of the prayer meetings earlier in the day until they were praying at about 5:30 in the morning, I think, you know, and then he knew that the men who would come out and would pray with him at 5:30 in the morning, the men who would live up to those standards or desire those standards for their lives, were the men that he wanted around him. I think in the same way, we select from those who have proved themselves faithful. Those who have been with us in the things that we've asked them to do. You know, even if it's doing the refreshments, or if it's doing some correspondence for us, whatever it is. You know, if girls have proved themselves faithful in those tasks, then according to Luke 16:10, they will prove themselves faithful in much. So in a sense, people select themselves. And then lastly, in looking for girls to be closer in to us, we do look for girls with certain character traits. We need girls who have a heart for God, firstly. 2 Chronicles 16:9. Girls with a heart for God, those whose hearts are perfect toward him. Then we need girls who are faithful, available, and teachable. Fat girls. Now I was going to refrain from saying that. But faithfulness, just from Luke 16:10 again, you know, if girls are faithful in that which is least, they will be faithful in that which is much. And if they're faithful in the things of the world, then they will be faithful with the true riches. They need to be available. You know, and one thing that I've been interested to observe over here, and I don't know whether this is more predominant in some parts of the States than others, but there are girls down south who are involved in so many things that, you know, it's just impossible. There's Young Life, there's Campus Crusade, there's Navigators, there's this, that, and the other, and, you know, and there are very, very lively churches, and, my, they have to be available if they're going to really be close in. And that means decisions for them, and God's calling for them, too. And then teachable. We want girls around us who want to be with us. You know, I'm not interested in having people live with me who don't want to live with me. I want them to want it, to be teachable, to be really eager to be there and to learn. We need somebody who compares herself with Jesus Christ and not with the girls around her. And 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 12 says that those that compare themselves with themselves are not wise. This isn't a competition. It's all of us following after Jesus Christ. And we need girls who demonstrate the desire to multiply themselves. Girls who are not just saying, "Here I am, please train me." But girls who are saying, "I want to be available to be used of God in the lives of others." To me, this demonstrates an attitude of coming to give rather than coming to get. And we need girls who are basically emotionally stable. By that I mean that they can stand up to the normal pressures of life, because there will be pressures, as we know. Girls who don't kind of crack up under the least little thing. Now, we all know, I think, that, you know, all of us have areas of instability, and God is going to strengthen us in those. But I mean by this, you know, a girl who really is either very, very fearful or very, very kind of hypertensive, you know, about everything. Or somebody who is very overly dependent. These types of girls, it might be wiser just to let them be a part of the Bible study group set up or the campus ministry for a longer period of time and see if God is going to drastically alter their ability to cope with situations before we draw them in closer. And then along with that, we need somebody who is optimistic in that they see the possibilities, that they see the positive side of life, not just the problems. Okay, now I'm going to rush on to some principles of development. And these really are principles here. They're scriptural principles, and they can be applied to any and every situation. And the first one, again, is prayer. Our objective in developing a ministry is to produce laborers. And from Matthew 9, 37 and 38, which I've referred to once, and is the situation where Christ says that the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Pray, therefore, the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. We see there that the key to developing a ministry is to pray. First Chronicles chapter 28 and verses 20 and 21 give us some idea as to how we should pray. I'll read those verses to you. David said to Solomon his son, "Be strong and of good courage and do it. Fear not, be not dismayed. For the Lord God, even my God, is with you. He will not fail you or forsake you until all the work for the service of the house of the Lord is finished. And behold, the divisions of the priests and the Levites for all the service of the house of God. And with you in all the work will be every willing man who has skill for any kind of service. Also, the officers and all the people will be holy at your command." And I know that those are the verses that Joyce Turner and Pat Lawler claimed and prayed day after day after day in the early days of the work in London. And it was exciting to see what God did. And exciting for me just to feel that, you know, as they prayed, that, you know, so many of my friends back home and I came around. And it was because they prayed. So that's a challenge to me. Am I praying for willing, skillful laborers? You know, particularly willing, because if they're willing, then God can supply the skill, but they need to be willing. And then 1 Chronicles 4:10 is another verse that we can pray. And that is Jabez's prayer, that God would bless him and enlarge his borders, and that God's hand might be with him, and that he would keep him from harm so that it might not hurt him. There are many other verses, and I'm sure that you have verses that you personally have felt the Lord lay on your heart to pray. But prayer is the first principle of development. Secondly, the word. Acts 6:7 says that the word of God increased and the number of disciples multiplied greatly. Matthew 13 gives us the story of the sower sowing the seed, and the seed that fell on good ground brought forth fruit. So the word plus good ground produces fruit. The third principle of development is to go, or going. Matthew 28, verses 18 to 20. Go and make disciples. There has to be outreach. John 20:21, Jesus said, as the Father has sent me, even so send I you. We are sent out. We have to go. The fourth principle, and it sounds rather dramatic, but I've put down death. And by that I mean that a price has to be paid if there is going to be development of a work. John chapter 12 and verses 24 to 26 state that unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. And there has to be this principle of death involved if there's to be a multiplying ministry. Death to self. A willingness to pay the price on our part and on the part of those that we work with. I'll never forget Doug Sparks once said that the moment we cease to pay the price, we cease to lead. We see this in Paul's life very dramatically, but one verse really expresses this, and that's 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 12, where he says that death is at work in us, but life in you. John 17:19 is Jesus' testimony of this. He hardly needs to express it because we see it so clearly, but he says here that for their sake I consecrate myself, that they also might be consecrated in truth. And to me that sums up death. Death to self. A willingness to pay the price of living the life that I'm preaching. And then Isaiah 58, verses 10 to 12, where we have those tremendous verses about pouring out our souls to the hungry. And God promises there that if we pour out our souls to the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then not only will he make our lives fruitful and happy, but he'll also raise up the future of many generations through us. But again, that takes dying to self to pour out our souls to the hungry. And then the last principle is dependence. Dependence upon God. John 15:5 says that without him we can do nothing. Psalm 127 and verse 1 says that unless the Lord builds the house, we labor in vain who build it. And 1 Corinthians 3, verses 5 to 9, bring out the fact that in this situation with the Corinthians, Paul is saying, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. So some of us are recruiters, some of us are builders. Big deal, you know. Only God gives the growth. So dependence is a very important principle of development. Our dependence on God. Talking about this campus ministry. Okay, this is the first situation. You and another disciple maker are sent to work with girls on a campus where there is a strong men's work under the leadership of a couple whom you don't know. There are two or three girls who come around on account of the men, but otherwise there's nothing going on among the girls. Okay, so there's your evaluation of needs, is that you need to get to know your area rep and wife and their thinking. You need to get to know and to deepen the relationship with the girl who's come with you. Your resources are yourself and this girl and the two or three contacts that you have on campus. Did you mention opportunities? The campus. Okay, and then you're going to win the hearts of these two or three and through them get to know their friends. Good, excellent. Do you want to get a broad base to your ministry as quickly as you can? And because that in itself recruits more girls, doesn't it? You know, the bigger the bunch and the more they can see that, you know, there's something here holding people together, the more that recruits girls. Girls hate to be isolated. Don't you find that? You know, they enjoy being in a bunch of people because that gives them security. And it's the same initially when they're first around. It's really hard to recruit just one girl in a campus situation. Much easier to recruit a whole bunch of them. And then they give moral support to one another. And to leave them in that bunch for a while before you select from it, because there again you're isolating individuals. And it's hard for one girl to kind of in any sense leave the security of that group to side with you. It's much better if you can help them all to develop as far as you can before you make your selection. But that's important. The danger there would be to give, you know, put all your eggs in one basket, and then those two or three might, well, they might either not want help or they might get married at the end of the year. And either way, you know, you've got nothing left to work with on campus. Just before we leave that, what would you do if those three didn't turn out to be ones you would want to work with? You say you'd branch off in some other direction. How would you branch off? Did you think about that at all? I mean, the men do recruit quite a lot of girls. Good girls. So, yes? Men are a resource. You forgot to mention that. Okay. So don't be afraid to use contacts that the men have made. And also, you know, when those girls come around as well, if the men have recruited them, the men are their friends. And we need to recognize that we cannot sever those ties straight away like that, you know, because that will turn them off. Okay. I don't know how to make this concise. Do you feel you've got the facts down from that? If these two or three fail, you're going to go out yourselves onto campus, praying like mad, and use any way you know to meet people, develop new relationships, and then use any contacts that the men have for you. And a good resource here too, we should put this down, is the area ministry. Because if you have a rally or something like that, that is a definite resource for your ministry. It's a resource to be able to invite them to something specific that will be fellowship, fun, but also will be a contact, you know, and evangelistic. This is the hardest one, I think. This is to do with working girls, and I really don't know how many of you work with working girls, but at least it makes us think. You and another two younger girls who are of the NAV disciple coming up to disciple maker level. move to an area where there is a strong work among couples and single men, but nothing happening among single working girls? And how are you going to tackle that situation? Then we've got the initial need is to get to know the leaders of the other, of the men's ministry and the couples ministry, and their objectives for the area. To develop a relationship with the couple, as well as with the leader of the men's ministry, and to see how we can serve them. Then our resources are ourself and two girls, the men's ministry, and the total area ministry really is a tremendous resource, because that is going to be the way in probably for most of these girls. To have a going concern that you can invite people to is the biggest tool in recruiting. Well, one of the biggest. Okay, another resource I think we could put down would be the church here, because it is a resource for teaching, for building up, for developing friendships and just good public relations with people in the area. Okay, then your opportunities are any contacts that may already be around. They're places of business where there are lots of girls working together. Places where they live, in other words, clubs or apartment complexes, and then the church situation again. In order to develop this, you pray, you live and work where the people are. You find a church, develop friendships, develop the girls who are with you, serve the area ministry, and use the area get-togethers. I mean, serve them as well, but use them as well. I was just thinking, we haven't time to discuss this too much, but it's good to think through on ways in which you can develop friendships, and be alert to any opportunities you have to, you know, invite people into your home, to join in some of the church activities maybe, in order to get to know some of the girls there, some of the individuals. Just as you think about that, and do think about it, just think in terms of spreading your net really wide, meeting lots of people, and then narrowing down. Rather than, as that group brought out in the campus situation, rather than just grabbing hold of the first two or three that you meet and then pinning your every hope on them. Spread the net wide. Okay, now the third assignment. Sent to an area where there is a fairly new men's work, both student and community, under the overall leadership of the area rep and his wife, with team leaders working with the students. There are 20 girls around, some working, some nurses, and some students. All have been to one-day conferences. Some have been in Bible study with one of the girls living in the home of the area rep. 12 of them say that they want navigator apartment training. Get to know the girls before you have any live-in apartments. And then you're going to develop the campus ministry during this first year. You're going to get to know the girls through the area ministry, through rallies, that type of situation, before you make any commitments regarding further training. Good. You're going to, you see a need to have Bible studies to accommodate the needs of those who are already around. I had you all with me when I went to Birmingham. The big cautions on this is don't recruit too soon. Make sure that when people are all keen and eager to be in a navigator training apartment, that they know what it means, which 10 to 1 they won't. And then, yeah, you have to set up some kind of program for that first year to meet the needs of those around, like Bible studies and that type of thing. But basically, maybe I'm slow, but I feel now, and this was my situation when I went to Birmingham, and I think it's taken me a year to really get a handle on exactly what we want to do and to begin to do it. Okay, we've rushed that, and I know that there's a lot more that we could discuss.